How much power? Charles is Charles, but the Queen. How much power did she have from the shadows?
I
One of the
don't believe
richest
she
women
did.
in the
Oh, that's right.
world.
Yes, you were going to ask me about this. I remember now. That's why you're what you're digging at. Yeah, the LaRouche theory. Yeah, I don't believe this at all. So LaRouche's theory, as I understand it, Lyndon LaRouche, is that Britain controls America and the monarchy controls Britain. Well, this is doubly false. Britain does not control America. Britain has a very particular role. With respect to America, and that role is that the British deep state is convinced that it must do everything to keep America in Europe and to keep American hegemony in Europe. Why does it do that? Because it thinks that that's the way that Britain can remain relevant, if you like, as the bridge or whatever, or as one of the facilitators. But it's simply not true. There's absolutely no evidence at all, at least I've never seen any, to suggest that Britain somehow controls America. I'm sure that the British services do things behind the Americans' back in order to put the Americans, if they can, to put them in a position where they have to, carry on being president. President, I wouldn't rule that out. But that's not the same as control. It's just not true. And, okay, then people point to the City of London and so on, and the power of the banks or whatever. Well, yes, obviously banks are very powerful, but again, they're not controlled by the British state. And yes, the City of London is very powerful. It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, financial centre in the world. Yes, I agree. That's true. And of course, the control of banking is, yes, that is an important power. But that doesn't mean the British state controls the American Republic. That's just not true. And as I say, we've had centuries now of demonstration because various prime ministers have been in power. They've had, unlike Keir Starmer, they've actually done stuff. They've been significant figures. They've clearly put their imprint on the country. The monarchs do not try to prevent that. They, apart from anything else, if they did, they would lose their throne, and they don't want to lose their throne. So they're very happy with the settlement. It works very well. It's a very good settlement.
Oh, I think Keir Starmer's left his mark on the country quite a bit. It's more,
Well, I
it's
meant in a positive sense.
ah, yes.
Thinking of the historic prime ministers like, I don't know, Thatcher, Churchill.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose Disraeli, I've mentioned already, Gladstone, Peel, if you go b further back in history, Wellington, these people, they were clearly men of power, and their
Right.
respective monarchs did not were not were not it's not the same thing. It's a different arrangement. It's a different arrangement.
Yeah, Starmer's going to make the top 10 list, but I think it's going to be the anti-record
Yeah,
top 10
exactly.
list.
Yeah, exactly.
And for last, oh, I'd say about, I guess, the last decade, except for maybe Johnson, who stuck around a bit longer, England started to look a lot like the Italians were looking for a while when they were changing prime ministers almost every year and a half, there's a new prime minister. Maloney's way has lasted a while. Draghi's lasted a while too. But for a long time, the Italians were like that. They had absolutely no stability in their government.
That's right. Well, they have a parliamentary system as well. So unlike France, which has a semi-presidential system, and unlike Germany, which firstly has a very solid party structure and also has rules against getting rid of the chancellor. It's because in the Weimar experience, in the interwar years, they had instability in Germany as a result of their parliamentary system, but they more or less fixed that. So indeed, German chancellors typically are in power for a very long time. And yes, I agree, the comparison with Italy is totally justified. I mean, it was absolutely psychotic in the case of the Conservatives, because, as you know, they had, what was it, five, I think, prime ministers in their 14 years in power. That's a reflection, by the way, of the internal divisions within the Conservative Party. It's a successful party because, or has been, because it does include lots of different people. So that's what, and then they started to fight with each other. And in a way, that's the Farage phenomenon is a product of that fight, because many of the people who were on the, what I suppose we would call the right of the Conservative Party, a lot of them have drifted off now to Farage, and he clearly embodies that, if you like, that wing of the disaffected Conservatives.
Yeah, and you're right. I was getting at that because we did end on LaRouche. Well, it's not just him, though. I mean, he was one of the more vocal conspiracy, well, I guess you'd call it conspiracy or theory, about the place of England and the U.S. But there's a lot of people that actually hold that. And then there's a lot of people who hold the flip side, that England is absolutely a lap dog for the U.S. and will do whatever the U.S. tells it to do.
Well, I
So
think
there's
that's
both
true. I think
extremes.
that is the truth. I mean, it's not, well, it's not absolutely true. So even Starmer, for instance, has refused, or at least hesitated, to allow the use of bases for the Iran war. Under Harold Wilson in the 60s, Britain never joined the Vietnam War. So there are moments
Very
where,
smart move.
yeah, there are moments where Britain diverges. But so it's maybe lapdog is perhaps a bit strong. But I repeat, the reason why Britain is perceived as a lapdog is that in the minds of the British establishment, America has to be supported also because it helps make Britain, or they think makes Britain, it keeps Britain relevant and makes Britain somehow important. So I think they imagine that they have some kind of indirect influence that, the values that America embodies are similar to those which Britain embodied and all the rest of it. So it's a way of continuing, if you like, the imperial dream. One must never forget that the experience of empire was absolutely decisive for Britain. All European countries had empires, all of them, all of them. Even small ones like Denmark and Portugal, they had colonies in India and
Well,
elsewhere.
Portugal was one of the biggest empires in the world.
Well, I'm even in the even up to the 18th century. So obviously Portugal in the with Spain and so on in Latin America, Brazil and so on. But throughout the entire period, really, and Portugal of course had a colony in China, had Macau until quite recently. So even the small countries, so everybody had empires, but the experience of empire was absolutely decisive for the British psyche in a way that is not the case for the French. So France also, of course, had an empire, but the imperial experience affected Britain in a way that it didn't affect other countries. There might be some comparison with the Spanish and the Portuguese in the 15th, 16th century, 16th, 17th centuries. And the way it affected it is that Britain, in my opinion, it adopted a globalist identity. The imperial identity was globalist. It was essentially a form of globalism. So it started out, of course, with a bunch of adventurers and buccaneers and sort of Sir Walter Raleighs and so on,
Bad
making.
cooking and the joke I've been told, it the British are such good mariners because of the bad cooking and the women.
So you had that aspect, but by the 19th century and so on, it had hemorrhaged over into a great monolithic proto-globalist enterprise, and of course it was very big. It was in 1922, it was the moment of its greatest reach and covered a quarter of the Earth's surface and a quarter of the world's population. So it was the biggest empire in the history of humanity, and that's not nothing.
Well,
So
we
I
gave it
think
a good run.
yeah so I think and I think that unconsciously now Britain, the British elites, without of course they would deny that they're still imperially minded, but they still think of their country, Britain, as being universal values, a bit like the American narrative. It's very similar to the American narrative. Although, of course, the American narrative is much more overtly nationalistic, MAGA, Make America Great Again, greatest country in the world, the flag, all this stuff is there's much more overt nationalism. But of course, as you know, better than I do, in the United States, this universalist globalist ideology is extremely powerful, certainly in the elites. And Britain is the same, let's say, minus the flag waving, because it's a slightly different form of national identity.
Because with the Russian Empire, and even with the Soviet Union, post, well, after, during Stalin, and then so on, the Russian Empire came out at a totally different angle. They came out more like the Roman Empire. The provinces that were the new territories that were assimilated, the people were raised up to the same level, they were educated, they were intermixed, intermarriages. Where they could, they converted them to Orthodoxy, where they were already some other established religion that was firmly established, just left them alone on that. But the point was integrate them, fully integrate them as part of one nation state. I guess it was an empire in that it was expanding, it had many peoples, but I don't think it was the traditional European version of empire or anything
That's
close
right.
to it.
No, indeed. It is, of course, very different. And it's also different because the territories were contiguous. They were geographically
Mostly, yes.
one space. All right. And that's.
Alaska and Northern California.
Well,
That
okay. Yeah. But
was
they were soon ceded. So the Russian Empire was totally, apart from Sakhalin, let's say Sakhalin is the only.
No. We had Hawaii for 2 years.
Yeah, okay, but
And
those
the
are.
crown, the British crown actually offered us Burma if we came to assistance, at which point.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's not the Russian model, obviously. You
No,
agree with
it's
me.
not.
Whereas, obviously, the British model is indeed that the territories are obviously everywhere and they
Right.
are, of course, by sea routes and so on. And that's what gives the British, gave the British Empire. I mean, all empires have a universalist message. That's why they're empires. They all believe that they embody universal values. That's entirely natural. But I think it was particularly pronounced in the British case, where, as I say, you have this, well, essentially what we would now call globalism. You saw this very clearly, by the way, in the early 20th century, in the late in the literally the sort of 1900s, 1910s, and then after the First World War, where various liberal imperialists they associated the empire with progress and civilization and ultimately with liberal values, but with universal values of progress. And they wanted, it's quite well known that they tried or wanted anyway to set up a condominium with the United States of America, a sort of Anglosphere, if you like. They had negotiations in Paris during the Paris Peace Conference. And it never came to that. But one of the elements of this current of thought is a really extraordinary idea was to make the British Empire a federation. In other words, the
Never
United
heard of that.
Kingdom would have become a federal unit of its own empire, which
Wow.
of course never happened, but it's such an extraordinary idea that an imperial power would, if you like, dissolve itself in its own empire. Because Russia never did that. I mean,
No.
Russia, I mean, obviously Britain was, oh, and Britain didn't do it either. So didn't work in the end. But
It's a hard sell for the people in the metropolitan,
it
in a
showed,
sense.
if you like, the kind of line of thinking, at least of those liberal imperialists.
Yeah, that's a hard sell for society. That's you.
Well,
That's
as
in
I
the
say,
center, the
it didn't happen,
cosmopolitan
and
society.
instead the opposite happened. The empire was eventually, as you know, dismantled and ultimately by the Americans, actually. But again, that's a blind spot for the British. They don't understand that the Americans were desperate to finish off the British Empire, and they did.
They always look at Stalin as the root of the collapse of the British Empire, but he did actually very little. It really was the Americans. I mean, the French were able to keep their neo-colonial empire. They're now just losing it thanks to the African Corps before the Wagner in Africa, in the Sahel. But you're right. The Americans did absolutely everything they could to crash the British Empire and crash the pound sterling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, we've got a hard time, but I would love to talk to you again soon and cover, if you don't mind, what reform is going to bring, what, if it actually makes it into Parliament with the parliamentary election. It's still a couple of years. Lots of things can happen. And do you think if the Starmer is going to be able to backdoor the UK back into the European Union?
No, I don't. Not formally, no. But there will be agreements. There will be agreements. It's quite possible agreements of alignment with EU regulation and so on. The myth is being spread that Britain has somehow suffered from not being in the European Union. It's a complete lie.
Yeah, I'd say it's quite the opposite, probably.
Wolfgang Münchau, the I think now ex FT columnist, very widely regarded, he tweeted only today that the Brexit was macroeconomically speaking a non-event. It really changed nothing, actually, economically speaking. And the idea, but it's being put about now by people that Britain somehow has suffered, that the economy has contracted, this, that, and the other, we've lost money and so on, is being widely pushed by the pro-European faction in British politics. But no, I don't think rejoining is possible, because that would be to reopen the whole Brexit issue and so on. And that was really quite a sort of psychodrama. But instead, I think it's perfectly possible that they will try to have alignment with the European Union, which
Well,
really
like
is
Norway.
putting yourself to a corpse, because
Right.
Britain is, yes, in a very, very bad economic position. That is true. But the rest of Europe is worse.
Oh,
The rest
much worse.
of Europe
Well,
is.
no. Stop. One second, one second. You cannot say the rest of Europe. We are 42% of Europe.
The rest of the European Union.
Yes. And you're absolutely right. The rest of the European Union is a
Yeah.
walking corpse.
I mean, Britain is particularly bad in terms of its debt and debt
Yes.
costs. They're very, very high in France as well, and of course in Italy, but the costs are even higher in Britain. But in terms of the overall economic performance, if there's one country that's gone down, well, there are two at least that have gone down since Brexit very, very dramatically, they are France and Germany.
Oh, yes,
France's
absolutely.
debt rating has been downgraded last year, and Germany, of course, is de-industrializing. Britain isn't de-industrializing because they didn't have any industry to lose.
Very, very sad that it got to that.
Yeah.
Well, considering Britain was the premier industrial power of for several hundred years, by far, the Americans were sending people with photographic memory to steal designs of
Yeah.
steam engines, these manufacturers. So
Well, those days are long gone, I'm afraid.
yes,
So, yeah.
and you know, I'll finish on this. It was a sad moment because when Brexit hit, there was a lot of hope in Russia to be able to get closer with the UK trade relations and so without having the EU wait. And unfortunately, that looks like that
Yeah.
all came to absolutely null.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, it's been exactly the opposite. And again, I've made
Yes.
this point many, many times. I hope I haven't made it to you already. Correct me if I have. But one of the perverse consequences of Brexit has been that Britain has tried to and succeeded in bigging itself up militarily within Europe. Britain is the primary, with France is the obviously the France and Britain are the essentially the only militaries, big military powers in
Oh yeah.
Europe. They're not that big, but they
Well,
are.
in the Europe, Western Europe, Central Europe.
Yeah, in the European Union, yeah. No, sorry,
Yeah.
just brackets. I mean, of course, I
Right.
agree that Russia is geographically and culturally part of Europe. But unfortunately, we are now in a situation where, and it's a very old situation, where Europe is considered one thing and Russia is considered another.
Yes.
And to be fair, Russians themselves, as you well know, refer to Europe as somewhere else, a bit like the British used to do.
Yeah, that's actually that's. I mean, I agree. We are a separate civilization. We're a civilization state,
Yeah.
but that's something that's really come in over the last about 4 or 5 years, where that rabid, I won't even say Russophobia,
Yeah.
just rabid hatred that was that came out in 22,
Yeah.
that shook a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Britain, as I say, in order to, as it were, for the British deep state, they wanted to compensate for Brexit, because of course they thought Brexit was a terrible mistake, and it was the great unwashed, rising up and destroying all their wonderful plans and so on. So immediately, as soon as the Brexit process was launched, Theresa May, the then Prime Minister, put Britain's military and intelligence capacities into the balance and said, we want to continue to be, make a contribution in military and in intelligence issues. That was her way, if you like, of dangling a carrot and hoping that the Europeans would award, trade agreements and so on in return. And that's been one of the factors, I think. I mean, there are many others, but that's one of the factors in the British extreme Russophobia, because that is the way that Britain can make itself relevant. And indeed, you'll have noticed that they've even created a G3. There's a G3, France, Germany, Britain. There's a G5 with Britain, I think Italy, and I've forgotten there's another country, but anyway, probably Poland. That's right. So it's Britain, France, Germany, Italy, and Poland. So Britain is there in these new informal groupings. Why? Because Britain is, although of course nothing compared to the United States, but it is, relatively speaking, at least in European terms, a big, let's say, bigger than the others military power. And so it's been included now as a result of this British policy, very much in, in the overall Russian policy of the European Union.
Which is an unfortunate thing. John, I want to thank you for coming onto the program.
Thanks, man.
We've got more things to discuss, so we will be back. Everybody, thank you. Thank you very much for joining. John, if they want to find you again, where can they find you?
Well, on my X account, John underscore Lauchland, Lauchland, and on Forum for Democracy International, FVD, for it's in Dutch, Forum voor Democratie, FVDinternational.com.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
And we will see you on the next one.